What's up, everyone? You are tuned in to Three Questions and a Song, where the title of the podcast says it all, except it doesn't, because it's more like 6,142 questions and a song. With me tonight, in their car, and I'm going to get to that in a moment, Microplanet. So there was this cool video, like blog that I used to watch from a local musician. It was called, now I'm going to forget what it's called, but, he would on his lunch break would meet other musicians in his car and he would play their song with them and then interview them.
That's awesome. That's pretty awesome.
But anyway, it was something in the car. I can't remember.
Oh, man.
I watched probably 50 episodes of it.
I have to look it up.
That sounds fun.
Anyway, so with me tonight is Microplanet. Where are you guys from?
So we're based in San Diego right now. We've been in San Diego, California for a couple years, which is where I'm originally from. And Nathan here, I met in high school when my family moved to Cleveland, Ohio. So Nathan's originally from Cleveland.
Yep.
Yeah.
I won't hold that against you.
you can hold it against Cleveland if you want. Okay.
I'm in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, he's in Pittsburgh, terrible town.
Yes, yeah.
Terrible town. Yeah.
Okay.
I forgot that's beef, but we love Pittsburgh. No, Pittsburgh's cool. I used to go there sometimes when we were way younger to back when I was doing like hip hop stuff, and we go do shows. Rappers from Pittsburgh would come to Cleveland. We'd go to Pittsburgh. I definitely got to bump elbows with like Wiz Khalifa and Mac Miller before they got super famous, and they were really sweet guys. So, no, love to Pittsburgh.
So I do want to mention that one of our affiliate stations is Rudoo Radio, which is in San Diego, California.
Cool. Oh, right on. Awesome.
So, I don't remember what time the show plays on that station, but we are on it. We're also on Music from the 412. This show is on just those two stations currently. They fluctuate where I end up. Pennsylvania Rock Show is on about six stations, including one in Scotland.
Cool.
And there are plans to get Three Questions and a Song on that one too, but time zones and teaching kind of
thwart
me talking to him all the time. Mm-hmm. In the summer, it's real easy. I just stay up until 4 a.m. and I'm good. So, okay, let's get to some questions. Let's start with the easy one, the most cliche one. I told you most of my questions are not the type of questions that get asked on a radio interview. This one is. Where did the name Microplanet come from?
So Microplanet came from kind of the idea of how I actually wanted to do the whole musical project in the first place. Originally I wanted Microplanet to be a more collaborative effort. And so each release that would come out would be with a different lineup of musicians, but then COVID-19 and quarantine happened. And so it was pretty difficult to be able to get together and collaborate with other musicians. And I had a bunch of songs that I'd been playing before quarantine that were getting a lot of reception. So I decided to put a bunch of them together and make a release. And I thought it would be cool if like each album was kind of like its own planet, essentially. So like each one kind of has its own vibe, its own element, and its own sound and style to it. So I thought like, well, what would be a good way to kind of like sum that all up in the name of the band? And after a lot of pondering, Microplanet just kind of popped in my head. And I was like, that sounds really cool. That actually could be something that could actually really evolve as a project. And I've just stuck with it. And it's been working ever since.
Very cool. So my old brain just worked. It's backseat guitar in the car with Brian Cease.
Okay. Okay. Backseat guitar. I looked that up.
Yeah, definitely will check that out.
Anyone from the Pittsburgh area, Brian is the lead singer of the band The Red Lines.
Okay.
Which you guys should check out.
Cool. Totally.
All right. So now we're going to jump into the different questions. We're going to start with the most important one that I'm going to ask you all night. And that's, what is the best pizza you've had because you're a musician?
You can go first because my answer is going to be a little long.
Yours is complicated.
It's different places.
The pizza connoisseur over here. My brain, I can't think of all the restaurants necessarily right now. So I guess I'm just going to go with like city style pizza. It's probably Detroit pizza. I like probably Detroit pizza the best, like consistently, like if I have to live off of it. But, you know, Chicago deep dish is a specialty, or the stuffed pizza, which some people don't know about. That's a totally different style in Chicago. The stuffed pizza in Chicago.
Definitely.
Oh, Luminati's?
I think that's what it was.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure it was Luminati's.
Yeah.
For me, here in San Diego, there's actually a place that's like right down the street from us that we love going to all the time, which is called Fiori's Pizza.
Oh, Fiori's.
Love Fiori's. Yeah. And they're real sweethearts there. Huh, what's up?
There is a Fiori's in Pittsburgh.
Oh, wow.
So now I have to wonder if they're related.
I have to. I'm going to ask now next time I'm there.
They're real sweethearts there, though. They, you know, every time we've had like a show here locally, like we go in there and we give them a poster and they put it up in the window for us and to help promote. And they're just a really sweet family owned company, and all of their food there, not just their pizza, but definitely their pizza is phenomenal. So definitely I would say in San Diego, that's probably the best spot we've been to. When I was living out in Chicago, I would have to say Chicago Pizza and Grinder Company. That place is, it's like impossible to get a seat in there. Like you have to wait like 45 minutes to an hour to get in. But if you do, like that pizza is like, it's not like the deep dish style, but like they like almost like make the pizza in front of you and like pour the cheese on top of the sauce. And it's like almost like a, you can't eat it with your hands. You have to eat it with a fork and knife. So that's probably my favorite Chicago spot. And then for like survival pizza, which is like I'm broke and I'm just trying to get by with the music life, would probably be Sarpino's Pizza in Chicago, because that place would deliver till 4 a.m. So when you've had a long night playing shows and, you know, you got to soak up all that beer, you know, definitely that's the emergency pizza to get to the house.
See, you just made me think, there's a Penn State University, which I did not go to, but I go there for a science competition with my students. There's a company, and I can't think of the name of it right now, but they serve chocolate chip cookies late at night. And they're like,
oh, nice.
This big. And like they deliver them just to college students in the middle of the night. it seems like a good business model.
Yeah. If you have a restaurant near a college, you're smart.
Yeah.
So now I'm going to start a pizza and chocolate chip cookie company, I think.
Hey, that'd probably make a killing, you know, for sure.
Uh-oh, we lost Mike.
There we go.
We're back. We're back in business.
The next question is the official Build to Scene question. I ask this like 99% of the time, as long as my head is working on that night. And that's, who is your Dave Grohl? And by that, okay, I mean, who do you want to go up on stage with and perform one of their original songs?
You can go first.
I definitely have to say Failure, for sure. Ken Andrews has been a massive influence on me as a producer and as a musician, just especially recently, like for the stuff for Submerge. And I actually did a cover of one of their songs off their first album, Macaque. So if I did get invited on stage, I would definitely know at least one song to know how to play with them. Also, they're just such a really cool, loud, heavy, but like melodic and atmospheric band. And I just think they would be a lot of fun to like just go on stage and just rip it with, you know. I think it would be, they seem like all really friendly, cool guys. And I think it would just be a lot of fun.
Yeah. Man, that's hard, because some of my biggest heroes, like, they're gone. Like, they're not living anymore. So, but I guess, oh, man, if I had to pick someone that's living right now.
Doesn't have to be rock music.
And I'm not picking just rock music, but there's a lot of people that are just dead now. they're not here, and it makes me sad. That's too tough for me. I almost want to pass, but my ultimate is Prince. If Prince was still alive and he asked me to get on stage with him, even if I totally sucked, I would do it anyway, because that's never going to get asked again. But that was the person that definitely made me interpret music differently and what you can do by yourself as an artist. Like, he kind of like is the first bedroom musician to a degree, with how he was so immersed with building out his home and his living space so that he could create music basically 24/7 by himself. And when I was a real little kid, like elementary school age, when I learned that he was singing all the parts and playing all the instruments, it was like, oh, you're allowed to do that? Like, that's cool. So it definitely encouraged me to want to learn as much music as possible, like from different genres, different instruments, and, you know, kind of go back at the people before you and learn from what they did, but figure out how to do it in your own way and progress into something different. It's definitely a big inspiration, I think, just in terms of like their work ethic and stuff. And they could shred also, flat out. They made amazing songs. So yeah, if I ever got an opportunity in a perfect universe and they were still alive, it would be Prince for me.
So I should have asked this question before that one, because it would have made it easier for you to answer Prince. So you're leaving a show and there's a DeLorean sitting outside with its door open and a flux capacitor in the back seat. Where are you going in time, and what band are you going to hang out with?
Well, since I already picked Prince, I'm going to go like in a different era, and it would probably be like George Clinton in the 70s, like funk progressing to that place, and how much of a weirdo he was and how much music they were making. I think it would have been cool to be a fly on the wall during that era, or during like the beginning of the grunge era, which I get stories from because my parents, like, that's kind of like their time. And
you saw that face, right?
Yeah. But you know, my parents,
I was in high school.
Yeah. My parents are they're Gen Xers, so like they were in that age group when that stuff was getting popular. And it's funny that it's for him, for like my dad, for him it's like Kurt and Wayne Staley and stuff, but for my grandpa it's like The Who and The Beatles and stuff. But it's really funny because they are like these weird reciprocals of each other in terms of like being these like really tight-knit scenes with a lot of different creative frontmen that were in front of these like really amazing bands that were well put together and just have stood the test of time, even though it was actually a very short period of time when the genre itself was at its height of popularity. It was actually a small part of pop culture history, but we're still talking about it 30 years later. Here we are kind of on the anniversary, unfortunately, of losing somebody like Kurt Cobain. It's 30 years and we're still talking about it. So like, yeah, I think like 90s, early 90s, late 80s rock and roll would have been a really interesting to experience it as an adult. I was a baby, so I didn't really get to experience it, but experiencing it as an adult would have been cool.
So I was in the early 90s. I was in high school, well, middle school and high school. So I did kind of experience it. I still remember the first time that I heard grunge for the first time. I was sitting on my front porch at the time, and my next door neighbor's grandson brought Pearl Jam over, and that was my first experience. Still listen to them to this day. And Nirvana I heard because of him, and Eddie Murphy for the first time was him too.
I party all the time, Eddie Murphy. But, awesome.
So my next question, because the bands you're listing, you know, and music, a lot of music that has originated here in the United States, you can trace back to the blues.
Mm-hmm.
And my next question is, if you were at the same crossroads that Robert Johnston went to sell his soul to the devil, so to become a great guitar player.
Mm-hmm.
Why are you at that crossroads? Why? And if you don't like that, I'm asking you why you would sell your soul, which is what's something you would like to gain that musically that you haven't done yet?
Hmm.
Honestly, I think for me, it would probably be like, because I'm a multi-instrumentalist, so I understand guitar, bass, drums, keys, and vocals all pretty well. But the one, it would probably be like, I would really want to be able to master a classical instrument. Like, I would really want to be able to be really proficient at, like, probably either violin or trumpet, because there's so many different genres that you can do with either one of those instruments, and that you can also add and bring in with modern technology into rock music, that I think that would just be a whole new world to explore and add already to the skills that I have as a musician. Like, and it would probably be trumpet, because I tried taking trumpet for about a semester when I was in college, and that did not work out at all. I did not have the embouchure. I learned about an octave, and that was about it. And I was like, that's it. I'm going to go to audio engineering now. I definitely think that probably learning trumpet would be the winner, because I could play jazz. I used to really love a lot of like Balkan folk music. You know, there's ska. You know, there's just so many different avenues that you can go with an instrument like that, and I think that would be the one I would really want to master, especially if I could just snap a finger, there you go, now you're incredible. I think that would be the one for sure.
So before I let you answer, and I'm sorry, we're halfway into the show, why don't you introduce yourself so everyone knows who's speaking.
I'm Nathan Wilson. I am the main songwriter and musician of Microplanet.
And this is I'm Ashley Moten. I am the bass player on tour, because, you know, got to have support in the background. And I help produce the album, and I do like all the marketing, social media, graphic design stuff.
Okay. Now, what I was going to say is I have a 15-year-old son. See, now you're starting to put together age. Who is a trumpet player and loves to play jazz.
Yeah. So. Okay. Yeah. I met Nathan in marching band when my family moved to Cleveland. I was a little bit older. I was like two grades ahead, and I met him. I was the like flute player. I was like a first chair flute, like prodigy nerd on woodwinds and also brass. I played like trombone and trumpet and stuff, because I got bored with woodwinds. I blew through all the woodwinds and then started blowing through all the brass. So my middle sister is a double bassist, so there's a bass laying around. So I kind of picked up some of the mechanics years and years and years ago before Nathan ever asked me to be in the band with him, because some other musicians just weren't working out and kind of dropped out. And I get a knock on the door, basically like, so... you think you can learn my songs in like 2 weeks for a show? I was like, 2 weeks? He's like, yeah, 2 weeks. I was like, all right, well, give me like 3 or 4 days. Let me see if I can hack it. And here we are about almost 2 years later. So it's been fun playing on stage with him.
Yeah.
Yeah. He brought me out of retirement to a degree.
No, a large part of also like just being in a band, like people think it's just like, oh, like, can you play the part really well? Or like, do you like the same style of music that we're all playing or we all are influenced by? But being in a band is so much more than that. Like being in a band is like, it's like being in a family. It's like being in a relationship. And like, you know, it's, you know, you have to be comfortable with that person. You have to know that they're comfortable with you, and that, you know, you're going to be in the same corridors for long periods of time. You're going to be traveling together. You're going to be in a recording studio for maybe upwards of 12 hours together. You got to know that you're going to work through things together, and you can communicate and respect each other a whole lot. So it's a trial and error thing when it comes to working with musicians. And the first guys I worked with, that wasn't so much the case. But with Ashley over here, I mean, we've been working together with Microplanet for years, but she just fit right in with playing in the band. And she's been my main go-to for about the last year now. So
almost two years now.
So like, you know, it's I think it's just one of those things where it's like, you know, when people really work well together, like it's kind of meant to actually happen.
I'm gonna take a short break. We're gonna play your song Pain Sucker, and we'll come back and we'll talk about it. And I'll have a couple more hard hitting questions for you.
Sounds great.
We'll be right back. Okay, we are back. That was Pain Sucker by MicroPlanet. So going with the dates we've been talking about, I'm wondering and probably pretty sure that you guys probably did not see an original episode of Storytellers on VH1 or MTV, but that's what we're about to do.
Okay.
Which is you're going to tell me a story about your song Pain Suckers. It can either be tell me what the song is about, or tell me about something that happened while you're recording it, or something that cool happened when you were playing it somewhere. It's just tell me a story.
Well, Pain Sucker is a song that is really about, like, you know, getting into being a difficult relationship and kind of coming out of it on the better side. So what I really love about Pain Sucker as a song, especially when playing it live, is it's like, it's a heavy subject matter, but whenever we play it, people always really seem to crowd in and come in together and like all start headbanging, and like that's like really like been the draw for us as a band, and what really took us off the ground to getting to like, oh, we can actually start playing bigger shows and go on tour and all these other things. So like Painsucker is just a really special song to me, because it, even though it took some hardship to get through what happened while writing that song, as well as also sometimes even performing the song itself, it's a really beautiful and emotional moment whenever playing that song live and just seeing so many people connect and come together. And then after the show, they'll always like, there was one time where I played a show and some members of the crowd came up and like cornered me like on stage as I was striking, and they were like, oh my god, that one song you played, Painsucker, that was like incredible. Like, oh my god. I was like, thanks guys, I just gotta like unplug my cables real quick. I really appreciate it. I'm flattered.
Yeah, that song's gotten like probably the hugest response out of anything that's been released. So yeah, it gets a lot of attention.
Now, this next one, I'm kind of going to pit you two against each other for a moment. I want you to tell me about something embarrassing that's happened while you're performing, but you have to tell me something that the other person did that embarrassed you.
Oh. We just got off a tour too, so like I'm trying to think. It's probably from some of our older shows. All right. He jumped into a song once and like gave me no time to tune, and we had to play it with different tunings and alternate like chords and stuff, because the tuning was off.
Yeah, I was like in a drop tuning and she was still in standard, so she had to like transpose it like on the spot. I was just trying to like be like, oh, let's go to the next song, because you know, still.
So that's eager. My big one with you. That was it worked. Everybody's like, that was different. But you know, because you know, you're playing for like a bunch of intoxicated people. But it still didn't sound that bad. It worked out, but it really pushed the do I remember my music theory live and in the moment. So that was fun.
Yeah. trying to think one with you. Not many with you. You're pretty straightforward. You're pretty professional.
That's how professional I am.
Keep it together. Huh?
That's how good I am.
Much for myself. You know? trying to think of any. See, I mean, the biggest problem that we've had when playing shows that is not necessarily really either one of ours fault is, so we use a drum tracks live when we perform, because we've just had trouble really locking down a drummer to fit in with us.
And if you want to move to San Diego and be our drummer, you know,
and it's not,
we don't have one right now.
but when we play live,
pause for a second. Right below me, microplanetmusic.com.
Yep.
I'm sure you can figure out how to hit them up there.
Yes. Down there.
Go ahead.
So when we played live, sometimes, because my laptop is kind of like on its last leg, the clip will like fall off time a little bit. It'll like glitch and lag for a second. So then we have to like readjust live while playing to get back on the time, because we don't want to start the whole song over again, and we can't like scrub through it or anything live.
Yeah.
So that's always been kind of a embarrassing thing. That's not really like mine or Ash's fault. It's more technology's fault.
Lappy.
That's what we call our laptop, is Lappy, the laptop. He's been reliable most of the time, though. He's great for traveling, you know, to save on hotel costs and, you know, plane tickets. That helps a lot.
Throw him in
a
bag and over your shoulder.
Yeah, exactly. He doesn't complain when we shove him in the bag and when we can take him off show, you know. Yeah. He's good for a drummer in that regard.
Yeah.
So I have another local band funny story for you. So there's a local band, Anxiety at Best, who was in the same situation, and they were using drum tracks. And they made a video where they were playing live and they kept panning to the drum kit with the laptop sitting on the throne.
Yeah, that's great.
Yes.
I wanted to kind of do something similar where I've wanted to put like googly eyes and like a fake mustache on the back of the laptop. So that way when like faces out to the crowd, we can like shout out like, hey, Lappy here on drums.
So do you program that in a drum machine?
I do kind of a combination of things. I program actually everything inside of my computer in a drum software that I use that has like a bunch of really realistic sounding drum kits, and then I mix it from there. But I don't always actually do programming. I do a lot of actually the playing of drums myself. I'll hook up like a V drum kit to my computer, and then that'll run into the drum software and input all the MIDI information. So that way it actually plays and feels like what I would want the drum part to be, and makes it a little bit easier also for like communicating to a drummer when I do want them to learn to play the parts live. I'm like, here, kind of do something like this, and I can actually sit behind the kit and do it, or just I don't have to worry about when I'm actually programming that it sounds and feels and operates like a real drummer would play.
Cool. How about maybe two more questions? Are you guys good with that?
Yeah, sure. Sounds great.
Okay. Well, two more off the wall questions, and then I have two normal questions. So it's really four, but
I like the math we're doing.
Listen, I don't teach math. I teach science. Oh, wait, there's math.
There you go. There you go.
And computers. Oh, wait, there's math in that too. And STEM. Oh, wait, it's the M in STEM. Okay, I teach math. anyway, if you were sitting on a bench and your musical idol sat down beside you and turned to you and said, you can ask me one question. First of all, who is sitting beside you? And second of all, what do you ask?
You want to go first?
No.
Okay. I would probably say definitely, I mean, I have a lot of different musical idols, but for the one question aspect, it would probably be Kevin Shields of My Bloody Valentine. And if he sat down next to me, I would probably ask him like, what is like, he's the dude who's known for having like a ridiculous amount of guitar pedals on stage, and I'm a big guitar pedal geek myself, and I would probably ask him like, what is the one pedal that you cannot live without? Like, what is like the one that always stays on your board, you always find yourself going back to or getting inspired by to write songs? Like, what is that one necessary piece to your formula to writing and making your sound and playing your music?
So now I'm looking at Ash and wondering if that deep thought is because of what you said or because she's still going, I don't know the answer.
I don't have the answers. This is awful. This is worse than Jeopardy. I think I would do better on Jeopardy than being asked these on-the-spot questions with musical idols. Like I said, all of mine are dead. I don't have anything.
Wait,
I don't have a lot of contemporary music.
You still have a DeLorean. I didn't take it away from you.
Oh, okay, cool. Yeah. This helps a lot. I love jazz a lot. So I would probably want to sit down with Vince Guaraldi and I would ask him what sparked the Charlie Brown theme. Like, how did that happen? Like, I know the inspiration is Charlie Brown, but the Linus and Lucy song, especially if you've ever taken piano, if you're a pianist listening to this, you know when you first play that piece. And I was pretty good at piano as I was young. I wish I didn't quit. But I remember when I sat down looking at the sheet music of that piece in particular, and like it jumps off the page at you in a really weird way, kind of like how Scott Joplin does. And I'm just like, how did you come up with that? Because like it's such an iconic piece of work now. But in its time when it was first heard, it wasn't, but somehow it repopularized jazz when jazz was dying. A lot of people don't think about that. Yeah. So Vince Guaraldi, I'd ask him how he came up with that.
I've never had that come up. And you were like, I don't have an answer. That was a great answer.
We actually did a cover of Christmas Time Is Here from the Charlie Brown Christmas special for a little Christmas EP that we released this last winter. Vince Guaraldi is definitely a big influence, I think, for both of us. Honestly, he's an incredible pianist. Yeah.
All right. So let me think. What's the, okay, here it is. So I had this band on the Pennsylvania Rock Show that's from Denton, Texas. So mm-hmm. you remember I said I had to come up with this show so that I didn't have to explain that all the time. they were called Diesel Beast. And I asked them this question. They were the first band I ever asked it to. And I ended up naming it after them. And I'll tell you their answer afterwards. But okay. if you could play with any musician or any band anywhere in the world, so whether it's opening with them for them, headlining and them opening for you, or actually playing a show with them, all of that is up to you in the answer. Mm-hmm. But who would you want to play with and where would you want to play? And it doesn't even necessarily need to be a normal venue.
Who and where? Ooh. Yep.
This is not a dead or alive question. Is the DeLorean still?
We're still available.
We're really taking use of that DeLorean. Yes. Like, we are taking full advantage of that.
Michael Jackson. He played the biggest crowd, like the biggest crowds. Like you can't get a bigger crowd. Uh-huh. Michael Jackson in like Moscow in like 1987 would be like the biggest show ever.
Yeah, God, that'd be so intense.
Yeah.
I'm gonna go in a completely different opposite direction because I love big crowds, but I was an avid festival goer in college, but I definitely also like really love small intimate shows. I would probably want to play with open for Nirvana at like the Casbah here in San Diego, especially like during like their Bleach era. Like they were just so much more raucous and crazy, and I just also love that album. It's pre Dave Grohl. Like it's like when like Dale Crover or Chad Channing was in the band. Mm-hmm. You know, I would have loved to have seen them during that time when they were like jumping into crowds, and it's just complete mayhem everywhere. And it's in this tiny, small little box of a room, and there's just all that energy flowing everywhere. Like that, or like Fugazi, like back in like 89 or something like that. Like that would have been incredible to open for a show like that. And then you get to see that show afterwards and be part of that energy. That'd be unreal.
So two good answers. Still keeping it called a Diesel Beast question though. Here was their answer. They want to play at Stonehenge with Dio.
Oh, yeah, wow.
That's sick.
Yeah.
Yeah. Can't really beat that. No. That's pretty. I was going to go metal. Uh-huh. I should have stuck with my heart. I should have stuck with my gut. See what happens when you deviate? But right, I have been watching a lot of old Michael Jackson footage lately. And that's why I said that, because, man, I don't think this younger generation realized how popular this guy was in a pre-internet era. It's pretty incredible. Whether you like his music or not, it's crazy.
I may have owned Thriller on cassette.
There you go. Hell yeah.
That's few people can say that.
I also was just thinking how cool it would be to be like a small shoegaze rock band opening for Michael Jackson in front of like 20,000 people.
Yeah.
Like that would be pretty awesome. I'm not going to lie. I would like to see how that reaction would come across.
That would have been amazing.
Microphone's amazing.
Yeah, that would have been a great endorsement. I know what I'm talking about.
No, that's a way better answer. I got to go with that one for sure. That's a winner right there.
See, now we have to find that DeLorean so you can make that happen.
No, I almost bought one in like 2009 from somebody, and then they backed out of the deal. Like the last, I got the money and everything. It's very sad. Still trying to track one down.
So at my old school, there was a parent that had one. I only saw it a couple times.
Mm-hmm.
They picked their kid up in it. And I so badly wanted to go ask if I could sit in it, and I never did.
Oh, man. You should have.
But hey, right, guys. So the last two questions, probably sure. The easiest two of the night. The first one is where can people follow you and get a hold of your music? And I'm guessing it's probably right there.
Yeah. Yeah, our home website is microplanetmusic.com, which I actually built. And we have a store there. So if you want to get physical copies of the album, because that's more important than streams as far as we're concerned, that'd be great. Spotify, Apple Music, all the different streaming platforms, of course. Follow us on Instagram at Microplanet Music. Same on Facebook. And yeah.
We're also on Bandcamp as well, too. And you can directly support us on there. We also have our merch available on our website.
Pause on that one for a second. It is a first Friday right now.
Yeah.
So it's the first Friday of March. So tonight, go get the Microplanet stuff off of Bandcamp because they get a much larger cut on
first Fridays. Bandcamp Fridays.
Yes. Thank you.
Yes.
And you'll have about, on the East Coast, about 2 hours and 20 minutes left until it's the second.
Yes.
So go do it now. Sorry, go ahead. I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, that's basically the gist there. Right. Yeah.
So last question for you tonight is, what's up next for Microplanet?
Right now we're playing a bunch of shows in Southern California, mostly in San Diego, and trying to get closer up towards the LA area as well. So if you're in the market for, you know, wanting us to play a show in your town or something like that, we definitely would love to. We just got back to San Diego from doing basically our own tour, like that was completely like just funded by ourselves. And we did shows throughout the Midwest and East Coast and got back to San Diego about 2 weeks ago. And we're planning on like hitting up all of those venues and some other ones this summer, coming up on the 1 year anniversary of Submerged, which we released back in July of 2023. I know this one's always itching to make more music, so maybe release some new music soon, like an EP or a single, but the big focus is definitely on pushing Submerged as much as possible and trying to get as many people to hear our debut independent release and, you know, hopefully get it in front of more eyes and ears over the next few months and this year.
See, and here's why I can never stick to three questions. You said something that made me have another question. Did you come near Pittsburgh at all on your tour?
We were in Cleveland. So we played a show in Cleveland and we played a show in Philadelphia, but Pittsburgh did not actually book us this time around. I think we had a conflict with the dates, so it didn't work out this time. But we would love to play Pittsburgh. We definitely reached out. Yeah.
All right, so I want to thank you guys for hanging out with me on episode 112 of Three Questions and a Song.
Man, so awesome. Thank you. Thank you for having us here.
You're welcome. For those of you that were hanging out and watching us live but not asking any questions, where were you? But thank you for hanging out with us as well. Make sure you check us out on the 1st and the 15th of each month. And see, you guys were going to let me go without doing
the question. Yeah.
Yeah, right.
I was going to let you finish your bit, and then I was going to chime in.
Good. But I caught it. You can't yell at me.
you came up with the question. You can ask it.
So my question for the next band is, if there was one country in the world that you could tour, where would it be?
Very cool. And I do have the question from Goddamn Wolves for you guys to answer. And I'm going to let them ask it, which I have to go grab because I was on the wrong tab. There it is. Here it goes.
Our question for Microplanet is, if your life were a movie, what song would play over the opening credits?
Oh, yeah. What did we say? More bounce to the ounce.
That's
happened, Roger. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That would be the one because, Nate's from Ohio, and we met when we were younger. I think that was a band. We bonded over Portishead, Radiohead, and like Zap.
And Talking Heads.
Yeah. And all the head bands, of course. Yeah. So, yeah, more Bounce of the Ounce, I think, explains our personalities also when you get to know us. We're a package deal. We're a unit. So.
And it's going to hype you up for the movie that's coming forward.
Yeah.
Get you ready to...
It's a comedy, right. Comedy buddy film. Yeah.
All right, well, Nate and Ash, thanks again for hanging out with me. And
thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Next episode is with Seed. And that one is going to be like 453 questions and 2,132 songs. And if you're not sure what I mean by that, it is Seed PA on Facebook. Just go there and it'll make more sense. That said, make sure you check us out on musicfromthe412.com, buildascene.com, rudoradio.com, and anywhere that you get your podcast because we're on like all of them. And we will catch you on the 15th.